Wednesday, July 26, 2023. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado. And we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. You are halfway through another week. I hope your week is going well. Hope, whether it's at work, maybe you're at school, maybe you're just in the car right now, I hope your week is off to a good start. You're getting some things done. You are almost to another weekend. And you know, I really hope that you and your family and your friends, you're all staying strong and healthy right now during this slow time of the year. Because there's not a whole lot to watch sports-wise right now. Talked about that a little bit recently on The Dose. We're in a little bit of a dry season. Don't worry, it's going to come to an end soon. But right now, it's a little bit tough. A little bit of auto racing on, some baseball. But thankfully, hey, at least we have the Women's World Cup going on down in Australia right now, right? Are you watching any of the Women's World Cup? I'll be honest, I have watched a few of the games. Now, if you're not keeping up, the United States is actually the favorite, and I watched them beat Vietnam on Friday night. They did it pretty easily. I think they won 3-0. And we'll see if this U.S. team can live up to the hype that they have, because they are the odds-on favorite. They will get tested by a few teams, though. When you think about the teams that are going to be up there, England, I would think Germany, Spain, France had a little bit of a setback over the weekend, but I would think they'll probably still be in there. Maybe even you get the home team, Australia, or maybe like a Sweden or Canada could be a threat to win it. And make no mistake, I know that patriotism is kind of frowned upon here in America, at least right now. We kind of go through ebbs and flows. We're really crazy patriots, and then everyone's kind of mad at the country, mad at everything. We're not going to be patriots here. And you know, we talked about this back around July 4th, just a few weeks ago. This country that I live in, here in the USA, it can be maddening. There is a lot of divisiveness in the country right now. A lot of complaining right now. A lot of I hate you and I hate you, and it's all back and forth. You're the bad side, you're evil. No, you're the bad side, you're evil. When in reality, most people just want to figure out a best way to live, to raise their children, to be safe, to be healthy. For the most part, everybody wants that. It's just that we kind of have different ideas on how to get there. For the most part, we're not that different, though. Just a little bit of tweaks in our thinking. And nowhere currently is it more obvious as far as the complaining and the whining that goes on in our country than on this current U.S. women's national team. They complain about our country all the time. If you watch, even prior to the game, there are maybe two or three of them putting their hand over their heart for the national anthem. They don't sing the national anthem. It's very stoic. It's very hands behind the back, straight up. They're not going to do anything. No emotion whatsoever. And in the media, the women's national team, they talk about how racist it is in this country. They talk about how misogynistic it is in this country, and that everyone is completely against them. They don't get paid as much as the men, despite the fact they don't bring in as much of an audience as the men. They still would like to be paid as much as the men. And so maybe the U.S. Soccer Federation in this country forced them to stand for the anthem. That's what they did. The women's team was very against it, but they said, hey, everybody's, you know, standing for their anthem. Most people are saluting. Most people are singing. You can at least stand up. So they're standing up. They are. You can tell they kind of don't like it, but they're standing. Meanwhile, on Friday night, we saw the Vietnam players. They had their hand over their heart. They were singing at the top of their lungs because, let's be honest, they better, or else you better sing. You better stomp your feet and light a match, because if you don't, oh, when you go home, there's going to be problems. And yet, it occurs to me that this U.S. women's team that says how poorly they're treated, they're an all-female team made up of all different races, completely different religions, different creeds, different beliefs, different backgrounds. It's kind of unique to this country. And it also occurs to me that I know very little about women's soccer. I'll be the first to admit. I coached some high school basketball on the female side, but I know very little about women's soccer. I will admit that. And yet, I just talked a minute ago about some of the favorites that are in this field, in this tournament. And they kind of tend to be the teams that allow their women maybe a little more freedom than other countries. You know, they're allowed to play a game. They're allowed to play sports. They're allowed to be athletes. They're allowed to wear shorts, have their heads uncovered. So they have a little more freedom than maybe some other countries. And those are the countries that seem to be doing pretty well in this tournament. They're going to be the stronger teams in this tournament. And then when I look at the other end of the spectrum at the World Cup, and I look at the teams that are struggling the most in this tournament, teams from countries like Panama or Morocco, maybe Nigeria, South Africa, even China, or like Haiti, makes me kind of stop and wonder. So while our U.S. team complains a lot about how difficult they have it in this country, and make no mistake, this country, like every other, has its problems. And yet, the very country they're complaining about also gives them the freedom to be as good athletically as they actually are. So I'm kind of torn. I'm like, can you stop complaining? And yet, I will cheer for them. I will root for them. I have no choice. I don't have another country. This is where I'm from. This is who I am. I'm going to cheer for the U.S. women's national team. They're my team. Even though they do kind of come off as a bunch of entitled whiners and complainers that clearly do not grasp the concept of the irony of complaining about the country that literally defends their right to complain about it. Any of that hit you just a little bit weird? Some of that just kind of hits me strange. They're complaining about the country that allows them to complain about it. Okay, so the U.S. women's team will face the Netherlands tonight, and we'll see if they can avoid an upset. Also, just real quick, be sure you take note of number 11 on the U.S. women's national team. That is worn by 22-year-old forward Sophia Smith, pretty talented player that hails from, that's right, kids, a little town by the name of Windsor here in my home state of Colorado. So, hey, I've got to cheer for her. I'm still going to root for him. I'm just hoping at some point, maybe this all sinks into the women's team. They'll kind of start to figure out you might have a little bit better than a lot of other countries out there. Hey, before we jump in today, just want to remind you, make sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com each and every week, where we have new articles going up. We have links to the podcast going up. We have links to the Daily Dose YouTube videos that are up. And we do have links to Daily Dose gear. You might need a new t-shirt. You might need a new sweatshirt. Hey, as we get out of the summer, head into fall, you might need a new hoodie. What better hoodie to wear than a Daily Dose one? If you watch the YouTube video, you can see one of the Daily Dose t-shirts right over my shoulder. But we have a number of different styles, and we have a number of different colors. You can pretty much pick any color that you want over there. Make sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com every single week. Today on the show, yes, we are in a bit of a slow time of year, but never fear. Because we are beginning to look forward to the coming football season. And we are going to be looking specifically at a lot of college football today. We have some of the biggest questions that I have for the coming season. Who are going to be the teams to watch? Who are going to be the players to watch? We have a number of things to discuss in the world of college football today. Plus, we will have a Daily Dose Top 5 for you today that is also going to be looking forward to that college football season. And I'm telling you right now, as dry as things are right now, I absolutely can't wait for it. But first, let's jump into a little bit of sports news. And it is now official. No more holding your breath. No more worrying. No more keeping those fingers crossed. The Washington Commanders no longer belong to Dan Snyder. NFL owners voting during a special session last week unanimously approved the team's sale from the Snyder family to a group led by bazillionaire Josh Harris. The Harris Group is paying $6.05 billion with a B, a record amount for a North American sports franchise. They passed my Denver Broncos that just sold last year. Snyder had owned the majority of the Commanders since back in 1999, and his family became the sole owners after he bought out all of his limited partners 2 years ago. And I'm telling you right now, Dan Snyder has been an unmitigated disaster as an owner. How bad, you may ask? Well, Snyder had been the subject of multiple investigations over the past 3 years that even led to speculation about his future as an owner before he even sold this. And, you know, he was causing fans to kind of pull away from that franchise. In fact, the NFL last week, in addition to announcing that Snyder would no longer be the owner, they also fined him $60 million after they released their findings following a lengthy investigation into the now former owner. The investigation began after a House Oversight Committee review into the workplace misconduct, as well as a Federal Trade Commission for alleged financial improprieties by Snyder were kind of dug into. Now, like I said, Snyder purchased the Washington franchise back in 1999 for $800 million. So don't feel bad for that fool. He's still making a grip of money. But think about this. From 1971 to 1992, the Washington franchise appeared in 5 Super Bowls. They won 3 of them. Now, 3 of them occurred in a 10-year period under former head coach Joe Gibbs. I think Joe Gibbs is a little bit underrated as a head coach in the NFL. Doesn't always get talked about as the greats, but remember, he did it with 3 different quarterbacks. Meanwhile, after all that success under Snyder, Washington had a 164 and 220 record. They did have 2 ties, so they only won about 42-43% of their games. In fact, only 5 teams in the league had a worse winning percentage in that era. Since he took over in 99, Washington won the NFC East just 4 times. And in the playoffs, they went just 2-6. And the team's 8 playoff games were fewer than all but 3 teams over those 24 years. Now, the Commanders last won a playoff game clear back in 2005. And like I said, it wasn't just on the field. It was off the field too. A number of controversies over the year. And when you think of Washington, at least for years, you thought of that strong fan base, how they always sold out. The stands were packed. People were crazy. And yet, in 2019, don't blame the pandemic. This was back in 2019. Washington ranked 30th. In percentage of seats sold, and 20th in average attendance per game. From that fan base? Those people are crazy. They stopped going. Last year, the Washington Commanders ranked dead last in both categories. Now, we know this sale had to be approved by the owners, but it didn't take long. That had to be the fastest deliberation since, like, the Aaron Hernandez trial. They wanted Dan Snyder out of there, and they are getting their wish. You know, like I said, we're going to be talking a lot of college football today, but one story we do need to touch on. You know, we talked a couple of weeks ago about Northwestern University firing their head football coach, Pat Fitzgerald, and how I was hoping that they did have some evidence to merit the firing. Well, it looks like they may have, but they're also still not off the hook with this situation. Initially, Fitzgerald was told he would be suspended for a few days during the offseason because accusations had come out that some hazing had gone on within his program and under his watch. Then, when that announcement was made, there was public outcry at Northwestern, and the university immediately fired Fitzgerald, but kept his staff. Well, now, a former quarterback has filed the fourth lawsuit so far, stating that hazing did occur in the program. And to be honest, it sounds like some pretty disgusting acts were going on. But it also says that this player believes the coaching staff did know about it. Okay, fair enough. Fire Fitzgerald. But then I have to ask, how is it that Northwestern is going to allow his staff to stay on? And don't tell me. Well, it was just too late to fire them. It's too late in the season. We're about to get started. What else can we do? Well, if that's the case, it's too late to fire Fitzgerald too. I mean, if you're going to make an excuse for it, either they should all be fired or they shouldn't all be fired. Either way, it has the feeling that Northwestern is trying to pacify the mob instead of just doing what is right. And as usual, when you try to make everyone happy, no one's happy. By the looks of this, yeah, Fitzgerald, maybe he should have been fired. And so should everyone else on his staff. The Major League Baseball trade deadline is already next Tuesday, August 1st. And you know, there are actually a number of teams that could be both buyers and could be sellers. We know the Los Angeles Dodgers probably want to look at upgrading their bullpen. They really need to find a shortstop. The Toronto Blue Jays could use another starting pitcher. They've struggled a little bit. But the team that we're all going to be watching over these next few days up to the trade deadline has to be those Los Angeles Angels. The Angels are being kind of funny here because they are insisting that they're buyers. They're not in between, they're not on the fence, and they're definitely not sellers. However, they have to be sellers, don't they? Because they really, really need to trade superstar Shohei Ohtani. Angels ownership says they're not going to do it. They say they're going to hold on to him and they're going to make a playoff run. Here's the problem. I don't think it's true. They aren't making the playoffs. And if they don't, and maybe even if they do, most likely, Ohtani's gone. He doesn't want to be in that franchise. He doesn't want to be another Mike Trout. They already have that. And he has seen how that story ends. It doesn't end good. Here's the problem. I don't think the Angels are going to make the playoffs. And if Ohtani leaves after the season, they're not going to get anything back for him. The Angels need to pull the trigger and try to get some sort of value for Ohtani. Because can you imagine if they just hold on to him and then he just walks and he can pick wherever he goes? There are rumors that he's interested in the Seattle Mariners. I would have to think just staying in the same town and switching over the Dodgers would be tempting. You know, the New York Yankees would love to make a run at him. The San Diego Padres could even make a run at him. Maybe even the San Francisco Giants, he could just move upstate a little bit. This is going to be so much fun to watch, though. Because if the Angels are smart, I hate to tell them to do this, but you gotta move him and get something of value. The problem is that rich guys don't like to be told what to do. But Angels ownership, you absolutely cannot afford to screw this up. Finally, we reach a story that isn't getting a whole lot of coverage in the sports world. That doesn't make it any less bizarre. And I'm going to warn you ahead. Buckle up. This might get a little bit bumpy. NBA big man, or former big man, Dwight Howard, is facing a lawsuit. He's facing a lawsuit from a man by the name of Stephen Harper for alleged assault, battery, intentional infliction of emotional distress, and false imprisonment. That's quite a list of charges there. The report includes alleged text exchanges between Howard, between Dwight, and this Harper individual. The alleged incident happened back on July 19th of 2021 in Howard's mansion down in Atlanta. Hold on, like I said, this might get a little rough. Harper had reportedly reached out to the former NBA star 2 months prior and began, they say, a sexually charged conversation with him. The report stated that when Harper went to Dwight's home, they talked for about 40 minutes before making out in his bed. Several minutes later, a man dressed as a woman who went by the name of Kitty reportedly arrived at the house and began performing sexual acts with Dwight Howard. Harper, he says, was then allegedly forced to join in on the acts with the other two individuals. Now, fans on social media have kind of gone berserk after we saw the alleged text messages between Howard and Harper were let out. And a lot of fans weren't surprised because there have been a lot of rumors about Dwight. What I'm surprised by is that there's really no coverage about this. Most of the media outlets are staying away from it. Maybe they feel it's a little too inflammatory and they don't want to go down that path. But, I mean, there are a number of people that are also defending Howard because we've only heard one side of the story, although that one side does seem to have some text messages kind of on their side of the argument. Now, you might remember, this is actually not the first time that people have questioned Dwight Howard's sexuality. He went on a sports talk show clear back in 2018 to state he was not gay. But this story isn't about whether he's gay or not. This story is way more serious. And it could have some very serious legal implications for Dwight Howard. And I can't help but think this. This story also does cast a very strange shadow on Dwight Howard. Because you might have forgot this, but back in 2018, while playing for the Washington Wizards, Dwight Howard missed a number of games with an undisclosed injury to his buttocks. Now you kind of look back and go, huh.
Congratulations, you played yourself.
That's a little bit odd, isn't it? Okay, coming back. The college football season is nearly upon us, and while we will eventually get to the point of breaking down divisions, breaking down the contenders, talking about the pretenders, today we have a number of questions for the 2023 college football season. We're going to begin our preview of the college football season when we get back. So the 2023 college football season is going to be here before we know it. Do you realize that today, July 26th, we are exactly 1 month away from real live college football games? Yeah, on Saturday, August 26th, Navy will be playing Notre Dame in Dublin, Ireland. The University of Ohio plays San Diego State. Hawaii faces Vanderbilt, and San Jose State will be playing Southern California. Okay, is that a blockbuster start? No, not really. But on that next Thursday, after the weekend, we will get a few headline matchups. We get Nebraska playing Minnesota, Florida going to Utah, and then, hey, we're off and running. That season is coming very quickly. Now, we'll talk a little bit about the schedule a little more later. But right now, I have a number of questions for the 2023 college football season. And to be real honest, it's going to take a good portion of this season for me to get these answers. But I'm telling you right now, I will be watching every week to try to find out these answers. So let's start off with our first question. And let's start off with the big dog, literally. Because those Bulldogs at the University of Georgia have now won back-to-back national championships. And head coach Kirby Smart, dude, has that program absolutely rolling. So my first question today is, can Georgia stay on top? I mean, in this era where players can move around so much, they can get in the transfer portal. Hey, I want this NIL money. I want that deal. The Bulldogs have been the most consistent program in the country. However, having said that, understand this. History is not on their side. Do you realize you have to go clear back to the 1930s to actually find the team that won three titles in a row? So obviously, this isn't going to be easy. And remember that this Georgia team did lose a number of big-time players, including quarterback, and I might add very underrated quarterback, Stetson Bennett. Hey, you can argue about Bennett, is he an NFL guy? I don't know. I know this. He was really, really good at Georgia. But it wasn't just Stetson Bennett. Jalen Carter, Nolan Smith, Darnell Washington, Christopher Smith, they are now all gone. And while the cupboard undoubtedly is stocked, we know Georgia has a ton of five-star talent down there. That talent's going to be inexperienced. They're going to be untested. This Georgia team will have some early tests, and we're going to see if they are capable of making another run this year. We know there are some really, really talented teams in that Southeastern Conference. Hey, Alabama wants to get back on top. You know that's driving them crazy. Tennessee should be a challenger for Georgia in the East. LSU has a very talented roster this year. Georgia's going to have some work to do if they are actually going to make a run at a three-peat. Our next question, it's not going to be answered for quite a while, but I want you to think back to the past college football playoffs that we have had, and remember, this is the final year of the four-team playoff. Then we're going to jump up to a full-scale playoff. But one thing that these four-team playoffs have had in common over the past 10 years or so is it seems like we usually have had a team kind of come out of nowhere and take a spot. I mean, last year it was Texas Christian. Yes, they're a Big 12 team. The Big 12 is good. But if you told me a Big 12 team is going to the playoff, I mean, everyone's thinking, well, it's Oklahoma. Maybe, I don't know, Texas. Texas Christian? And yet there they were. We have seen teams like Ohio State kind of sneak in or Notre Dame. But then we've had Cincinnati, Michigan State, even the University of Washington. So going into this year, who could we see sneak in and take a spot in this final season of a four-team playoff? I mean, there are a few contenders, and we'll talk about them more in the next few weeks, but I mean, you think of a team maybe like USC or Penn State. They've got a lot this year. Tennessee, LSU, there are a number of teams out there that maybe aren't your first teams that come to your mind, and yet they're going to be making a run this year, or at least they'll have a shot. We have traditionally gotten three teams that we expect and then one surprise. I want to see who that surprise could be this year. Now, for our next question, we're going to move to a conference that has been going through some very difficult times, both on and off the field, because the Pac-12 has been to just two college football playoffs in this 14 playoffs existence. And in those playoffs, they have won just one single game. Okay, that's not great, right? Okay, but off the field, things actually might be worse, where the Pac-12 completely bungled COVID. And then their Pac-12 network has been an absolute disaster. And now the Pac-12 is literally just hoping to get some kind of a new TV contract to keep that league afloat. Also, don't forget that USC and UCLA are bolting the Pac-12 for the Big Ten as soon as possible. Here's where this kind of gets weird. The Pac-12 should be pretty good this year. They've got a lot of talent. Think about the talent they have at quarterback. USC has Heisman winner Caleb Williams. Oregon has Bo Nix. Washington has Michael Penix. And Oregon State now has DJ Uiagalelei. Hey, the Pac-12 should make a run this year. They literally might be playing for the future of that once proud conference. But can that conference finally win some big games this year? Maybe rally a little bit on the field? I mean, honestly, the table looks like it is set for them. Go do something this year. Go make a playoff this year. Go win a title this year. But they haven't done anything recently. I want to see if the Pac-12 can rally. Speaking of the Pac-12, and speaking of USC, quarterback Caleb Williams is the defending Heisman Trophy winner. Of course, Williams and the Trojans had a great year last year, ended a little bit poorly, but hey, Caleb Williams and USC could and should be even better this year. USC returns a ton of talent on both sides of the ball, and head coach Lincoln Riley, I mean, he has produced a few Heisman winners. And honestly, Caleb Williams looks more talented than either one of those guys. Now, remember last season, it looked like USC was going to be a shoo-in for the college football playoff. They were going to the Pac-12 title game. All they had to do was beat Utah, and they were going to be in. Not only did they lose to Utah in the Pac-12 title game, they got blown out 47-24. And then, as if that wasn't bad enough, they also lost the Cotton Bowl to Tulane. So you got to know, the Trojans are thinking, we were so close. And we came away with nothing. In the history of college football, we have had just a single two-time Heisman winner. And that was over 50 years ago when running back Archie Griffin won two Heisman for Ohio State. But Caleb Williams might be the best chance we have had since then. And yet, we have seen some pretty talented guys come close, but not do it. Tim Tebow, O.J. Simpson, Herschel Walker, Charles White, Billy Sims, they all came close to winning two, but they all failed. Can Caleb Williams rewrite some history this year? My next question is a question that I have, honestly, most every single year, but it might apply even more this season. Because every year, the sports media tells us that the Notre Dame Fighting Irish are worthy of a top ranking, whether they are or not. And most seasons, it has been proven to be false. They shouldn't be ranked as high as they are. They've played some softer schedules. They win some games. They act like they're among the elite. And they're climbing up the rankings. But then when they see an actual contender on their schedule, they go down like a Charlie Weiss exercise plan. Well, this season, the Irish, they might be a dark horse playoff contender. Yes, they lost some talent on that defensive front. That defensive front was very, very good. But head coach Marcus Freeman done a pretty good job of recruiting. And he also won a huge prize in the transfer portal. Because Marcus Freeman convinced former Wake Forest quarterback Sam Hartman to come to South Bend. Hey, Notre Dame hasn't had a top quarterback probably since like Brady Quinn back in the early 2000s. Well, Hartman has already thrown for nearly 13,000 yards in his collegiate career. He joins an Irish offense that was already pretty good. They averaged 32 points per game last year. And they return a number of those players from that offense. And they add Sam Hartman. Hey, if this group could develop that defensive line, Notre Dame might be a contender. Could the Fighting Irish actually be deserving of a high ranking that we know they're going to get at some point this season? I don't know, but I want to find out. You know, we spoke a little bit about this earlier, but when you think back to past years of that college football playoff, we have seen it a little bit more and more, especially recently. Remember when the University of Central Florida did not get selected for the college football playoff? So then they, I don't know, put on a little skit and pretended like they won it all. Well, we have seen some teams from outside those power conferences at least make a push for the playoff. I mean, last year, Tulane almost got there. Cincinnati did make it the year before. Coastal Carolina went undefeated in the COVID year, and they made a little bit of a case to be included. Hey, we know this is the final year of that four-team playoff. Could a group of five team be out there that is capable of making a run and getting in? We already talked a little bit about Tulane this year. That is a team that beat USC in the bowl game last year, and they're returning a good amount of talent from that team. But we also know there are a couple other teams out there that maybe don't have the big name, but they could make a push. We'll see if a group of five team is capable of making a run against the big boys. Okay, one more question that I want to discuss before we take our final break here on the Daily Dose. But every year, it seems like we keep hearing about this team is back. That team might be back. What I want to know is who is actually back. We hear it every single year that the Texas Longhorns are back. I have yet to see any evidence of it. Every year, they kind of look exactly the same as they did the year before. We have heard about the Miami Hurricanes being back for a few years, too. They got a new head coach last year. They did show some signs of improvement, but I'm not sure that Miami is quite back. Nebraska is hoping to be back under their new head coach, Matt Rhule, after that Scott Frost disaster. Could they be back? We'll see. I think it's going to take a little bit of time for them. But you know, one team that actually might be back could be the Florida State Seminoles. Hey, they won their bowl game last year after going 11-2, and the Seminoles return 16 starters from that team. Hey, Clemson has been rolling in the ACC for a number of seasons now. This kind of sounds crazy, but do you realize the Clemson Tigers have now won 7 of the last 8 ACC titles? And the other one to win it wasn't Florida State. No, it was Pitt. But if Florida State is actually back, they could make a run to an ACC title this year and make a change that we haven't seen in quite some time with the domination in the ACC that we have seen from the Clemson Tigers. Okay, coming back, we have a few more questions about this coming college football season, but then we are going to be getting excited for the season just a little bit more because our Daily Dose Top 5 is going to be counting down some big, fun, primetime matchups. And those matchups are going to be here very, very soon. So today on the Daily Dose, we have some questions for the coming college football season. And while some of them may take a while to get answers to, these are the answers that I'm going to be looking for in the coming year. And the next question that I have is, what is the Big 12 conference going to look like this season? Now remember, the Big 12 now has 14 teams in it because they are preparing for Texas and Oklahoma to make that jump to the SEC. So this year, and this is kind of strange, but the Big 12 has added Brigham Young University, the University of Houston, the University of Central Florida, and Cincinnati joining them. Now, one thing about that is travel just gets worse. It was bad enough that West Virginia was in that conference. A lot of travel there. Now you add a few more teams from all over the place. And that Central Florida one is really, really going to be distance challenging. But when you think about these teams that they just picked up, and if you were to look at the Big 12 right now, yes, of course, you look Texas, Oklahoma, of course. That's what it is every year right now. But I mean, BYU, they've been winning games for the last 4 or 5 seasons. And you might not realize this, but former Southern California quarterback Keaton Slovis, yeah, he is now a BYU Cougar. We'll see if BYU can make any noise in the Big 12. Cincinnati, we know they've made the playoff. I think they're going to have a little bit of a tough time this year. Remember, they lost their head coach, lost a number of players. They're going to have some rebuilding to do, but Cincinnati at least is capable of doing some things. Houston has been very, very competitive. And we know Central Florida, no, they weren't really the national champions, but they have a ton of talent right in their backyard. Not only does the Big 12 add Central Florida, but that conference also gets a foot in the door for recruiting down in the state of Florida. That doesn't happen a ton. Big 12 might have kind of changed the look of this conference. That conference is going to look very, very different this year. Now, like I said, I would think Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas State, maybe TCU, maybe Texas Tech, they should be pretty tough this season. But with those new four teams coming in, Big 12 might be pretty fun to watch. Might have to watch a little bit more of that conference, maybe than I usually do. Okay, we have to get to a big question here in my home state of Colorado, and that is, of course, what is Coach Prime, Deion Sanders, going to do up in Boulder at the University of Colorado? So the hippies up at Boulder apparently finally got tired of being the perennial doormat every single season, and they somehow lured Deion Sanders to the Flatirons from a Division I AA school, Jackson State. And Sanders immediately showed up in Colorado and booted a bunch of kids off that team in favor of players from the transfer portal and a number of kids from that D1 AA level. And there's a ton of excitement going on up in Boulder. The spring game sold out. They haven't sold that out in years. All the home games are selling out. It is a hot ticket to have a ticket to go see the Buffaloes this fall up in Boulder. And that obnoxious fan base in Boulder has somehow gotten a little more arrogant. But the question I have is, does Deion mean more wins for that program? Hey, I'll be very, very honest. I am thrilled that my home state of Colorado is back on the map in terms of college football. There hasn't been any excitement in this state for decades about college football. Hey, I've said it before, and it is absolutely fact. The program at Air Force is the best college football program in this state, and it isn't even close. Pretty embarrassing if you're Colorado. I mean, you're in the Pac-12. You should be the big dog. You haven't even been the big dog in your own state in years. But we're kind of back on the map, and it is because of Deion Sanders. But I personally, I've got a few concerns about this situation. And I'll tell you one concern I have right now, and that is the health of Deion Sanders. He's having some very serious problems in terms of, apparently, Sanders has blood clots that have been forming in his legs. And they've had to remove some toes. There's been talk about removing a foot or that he could lose a leg. He recently had a surgery and they're saying it went well. But that's what they said after the last one too. So I don't know what to think. And my problem with Sanders being unhealthy, obviously he's not playing, but how much is he even able to focus on this massive rebuild project? That's not a minor job. That's a big, big job. To rebuild again, like I said, after decades of incompetence. He's got a big job ahead of him, and he's not even fully healthy. But then, I also wonder about how many of those kids that follow Deion from Jackson State, how many of them are even like legit D1 Pac-12 players? I don't know. I'm not sure. When he was down at Jackson State, Deion Sanders won a lot of games because he had more talent than all the other teams. I'm not sure that's going to be the case this year. CU's schedule is not easy. I am really going to be fascinated to watch. Can Coach Prime prove that he is worthy of all the excitement that is going on up in Boulder right now? There's a ton of excitement. Haven't seen it in years. I'm not sure if they're going to be worth the hype, but it's going to be fun to find out. I want to move to another Power 5 conference, and I honestly, I can't believe I'm saying this. But one question I have this year is, can the Michigan Wolverines beat Ohio State again this year? After being dominated by the Buckeyes for years, Jim Harbaugh and Michigan have now won back-to-back games against Ohio State. They have gone to the college football playoff 2 years in a row. And last year, they beat the Buckeyes at their place. Now, I would think, based on recruiting and who's coming back, most everyone is probably going to pick Michigan to win the Big Ten. And everyone's going to probably pick them to beat Ohio State for a third time in a row, because this year the game will be in Ann Arbor. But can Michigan live up to that hype? And you know, now we are hearing that Michigan head coach Jim Harbaugh could be suspended for the first four games of the season for some violations that were committed during COVID. Although, with Michigan's first four opponents, East Carolina, UNLV, Bowling Green, and Rutgers, I don't even think it'll matter. And honestly, I'll believe the NCAA can actually get Harbaugh to sit out when I see it. Hey, that Big Ten is going to be highly competitive. There are a number of contenders in that league, and they're not all Michigan and Ohio State. There's a few other schools that could win that. There's a few other schools that could go to the college football playoff. But Harbaugh does get quarterback J.J. McCarthy back. He gets a Wolverines defense that has been pretty stout. They're returning a lot of players too. Can Michigan live up to the hype? Expectations sometimes can ruin a team's season, especially in college, because you can't always adapt to that. You thought you were really good. Things start to go bad. It can snowball. We'll see how expectations affect Michigan this year. Our final question that I have for this college football season is one that we always kind of watch here at the Dose. And that is, which quarterbacks are going to step up and be their team's number one guy? And as usual, it's not like the small time teams. No, we have some legit blue blood programs that are still trying to name their starting quarterback for these upcoming games. Hey, how many seasons in college football have we seen a quarterback come on a scene we didn't really know going into the year? We didn't know their name. We didn't know much about him. Oh, yeah, he's a backup. We'll see who the starter even ends up being. And then they end up being a star. They end up being that guy. They make a magic run. They maybe get to a big bowl game. They're in Heisman contention. It's happened a number of times. So which quarterback could come out of nowhere and surprise everyone this year? Going to be interesting to see. Now, I'll be very honest. We're not going to drill down on which teams just yet, but don't worry. We will be talking about some of those quarterback competitions over the next few weeks. Hey, the official start to the college football season is literally 1 month from today. And while we know a lot of times college football, it's mostly predictable. It can be predictable. A lot of times we go out and we pick, hey, the top two, three teams, they're going to probably contend for a title. And they have. We've seen a lot of repetitiveness, a lot of the same blood in college football. And yet, college football every year is so much fun. There are upsets. There are new stars being born basically right in front of our eyes. There are unforgettable plays, amazing performances. Hey, this season, yes, it'll probably be predictable. Yes, the big dogs are still going to be the big dogs, and yet it's going to be really, really fun, because every year there are a ton of surprises, and I am definitely here for it. Hey, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Staying with our college football theme this week, there are a few kind of different sections of the college football season. When you really stop and think about it, you have those opening games, and they come in late August, maybe early September. And especially the first week, sometimes two, they're not always the best matchups. The catch is, at that point, we as fans are so starved for real life football that we'll sit down and watch like Ball State versus Maryland. I don't care. It's on. It's a Thursday night. There hasn't been anything to watch in over a month, and I'm going to sit down and watch this game. Then after that week or two, we get into some really good out-of-conference matchups. Those kind of go from September into October, and then we get into those conference games. Got big matchups every single week. Then we get into those rivalry games where we're seeing the big rivalries. Everything's coming down. Who's going to be on top of their conference? Then you get to the conference championships. And finally, we get to the bowl games. Well, like we've been talking about all day, the start of college football is 1 month exactly from today. And, you know, there's going to be a few interesting matchups. We might get a surprise or two, a fun game that maybe we didn't expect. And as usual, we'll be so starved for football at that point, we're going to tune in and watch some of those bad games. But today, our Daily Dose Top 5 is actually going to preview this coming season by looking at something very specific. We're going to count down the top 5 college football games that are coming this September. And I can't wait to see them. So let's start off at number 5. And in our number 5 entry here, we are going to have two teams that are both going to need this game. As early as it is, we're like a week or two into the season. They kind of need to find a way to win this. The game will be played on September 9th here in Boulder, Colorado, when the Nebraska Cornhuskers come to town to renew their rivalry with the Colorado Buffaloes. Now, both teams, like I said earlier, have been struggling. Not in the last couple years, like for a while now. We're going back decades. They've both been struggling. And both these teams are trying to rebuild under brand new head coaches that are bringing a ton of excitement. Colorado has Deion Sanders. Nebraska has Matt Rhule. And these two coaches, they've already kind of started sniping at each other a little bit in the media. Makes it a little more interesting. Colorado is going to open this season in week one against Texas Christian. Now, TCU had that great season a year ago. I would think they'll still be okay this year, but they got to take a step back, don't they? They lost too much talent. And yet, I mean, it's TCU. That could easily be a loss for CU when they go on the road to TCU. Okay, so after that game, you have the Huskers. Then CU hosts Colorado State. It's probably a win for CU, but that's a rivalry game. Then they go to Oregon and they host Southern California. Hey, if CU loses to TCU and they lose to Nebraska, you got a real strong chance of starting this season like 1-4. Meanwhile, Nebraska kind of has a similar situation. See, they open on the road at Minnesota. Then they get a couple of soft opponents after CU, but then they dive into that nasty Big Ten schedule. Yeah, this game's big for Nebraska too. And you know, this game is going to be pivotal to each team's season as well as kind of the perception of each team's head coach. Nebraska at Colorado on September 9th. Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm definitely looking forward to that one. We move up to number 4. And the following week on September 16th, we get another game that it's going to be interesting because we're going to get an early SEC matchup that might give us at least a little bit of a hint as to how the east side of that conference should shape up. Because the Georgia Bulldogs, like I said earlier, they're coming off of back-to-back titles. They will open the season with a couple of patsies, like usual. They usually have a couple of soft ones. And then we find out how good they are. Because Georgia might need those soft games. They do have to replace a number of really good players on that defense. And they have to replace quarterback Stetson Bennett. Well, Georgia will be hosting the South Carolina Gamecocks, who return quarterback Spencer Rattler. And while that defense lost quite a bit of talent, hey, head coach Shane Beamer, he's done a decent job of building the Gamecocks into kind of a scrappy team. they closed last year pretty hot. If Georgia does struggle to find a quarterback, and this is going to be their first real game against real competition, because the first two games are very soft. Hey, this could end up being a more interesting game than anyone might think. If South Carolina has their legs under them a little bit more, and Georgia isn't quite sure who they are, yeah, South Carolina between the hedges at Georgia on September 16th, that comes in today on our list at number 4. So we reach the number 3 September college football game that I absolutely cannot wait for. And we fast forward to September 23rd, where we get to a game that I know it's early, but it legitimately has national title implications. Now, you might remember that last year, Ohio State had to come back to beat Notre Dame in their opener. That game was played in Columbus. But when they came back and they beat Notre Dame, hey, there was no doubt Ohio State was going to be in the college football playoff conversation, at least. They had a lot more to do. But when they beat Notre Dame, everyone was like, yeah, they're going to be that kind of team. Well, this year the game is going to be in South Bend. And while the Buckeyes will be looking for a quarterback to replace C.J. Stroud, like we already talked about, the Irish offense, yeah, they might be really, really good. You have a potent offense, and you add quarterback Sam Hartman, I expect this to be a pretty decent game. And by the time the rankings come out, and they've already played a week or two, there's a good chance that when Ohio State goes to Notre Dame on September 23rd, both these teams could be top 10. They could even be top 5 by the time this game is played. And the winner, once again, is going to be in the conversation for that college football playoff. Yeah, Ohio State going to Notre Dame is going to be must-see. And it comes in today on our list at number 3. So we reach the number 2 game of this September college football season of games that we cannot wait for. And we have another huge one here at number 2. And it is another rematch that has college football playoff implications on the line. Alabama right now, I mean, we haven't even talked about them yet. They're in very unfamiliar territory. Because we're all kind of forgetting about Alabama, right? Georgia is the king of the mountain right now. And Kirby Smart has found ways to beat Nick Saban and the Crimson Tide. But you just know Saban is dying to get back on top. Meanwhile, Texas is in their final season in the Big 12, and they are about to join the SEC. Head coach Steve Sarkisian, hey, he knows Nick Saban well, and he would love nothing more than to beat his former boss. Now remember, last year, Alabama squeaked out this win in Austin, 20-19. But I remember that game. And Texas, honestly, they outplayed the Crimson Tide for most all of that game. The problem for Texas, they just couldn't finish. If the Longhorns actually go into Tuscaloosa this year and get a win, oh yeah, you're going to be hearing a whole lot about how Texas is back. Meanwhile, if Alabama holds serve, they take care of business at home, then yeah, once again, they're going to be back in playoff conversation, which is where they are used to being. The Texas Longhorns going to Alabama to play the Crimson Tide on September 9th comes in today on our list at number 2. So we reach the number 1 game in September this fall that we cannot wait for. And this one is early, and it should be really, really good. Sunday night, September 3rd. Yes, that is Labor Day weekend. It is going to be in Orlando, Florida. And the Florida State Seminoles are going to face the LSU Tigers. Now, we already talked earlier about Florida State. They want to prove they're back. They might be the class of the ACC. We'll see. Quarterback Jordan Travis, he's back. He's got some weapons around him. Head coach Mike Norvell, hey, that guy's done a really, really good job of rebuilding this roster. Now, we'll see if Florida State has the defense, specifically the run defense. But if they do, yeah, the Seminoles could be in for a very big year. Meanwhile, Brian Kelly has already beaten Alabama in his first year on the job last season, and they won the SEC West. We kind of forget about that right now, don't we? LSU won the SEC West last year? Did they really? Remember their first game they lost? But Brian Kelly did a really good job last year rallying the troops, and then this year, he managed to get quarterback Jaden Daniels out of the transfer portal. Now, I think LSU has to get a little bit better defensively, but wow, if they do, they could make a run at the playoff. Remember, last season, Florida State came back and edged out the Tigers on a late field goal. You just know that Brian Kelly and LSU would love some revenge. LSU at Florida State tops out our Daily Dose Top 5 this week as the game that I can't wait to see this September. And like I said, that is just over a month away. Hey, next week on the Daily Dose, we are actually chasing a couple of guests. We'll see if we can get them. But like we talked about earlier, there are a couple of college football programs that are still trying to settle on a starting quarterback. It's not just in college. In fact, there are also some NFL teams that still need to settle on their quarterback too. So we may have to kind of cover both of those. Plus, you know, we'll be bringing you the latest in sports as only we can. So make sure you tune into the Daily Dose next week and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com every week and checking out the new things going up over there. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
Congratulations, you played yourself.